I'm going to be talking about the ever-present question of cholesterol tonight, and hopefully bring you along up to speed in understanding what cholesterol is, what it does, and just going to wait a minute or two. Great, thanks for saying I can hear you. Excellent. So I guess of the moment, the whole ADAPT team just arrived in Durham today, and we are going to be filming the KMS 2.0 this weekend. So that's pretty exciting. We actually, over the last few months, have revamped the content of the Keto Made Simple course, and there'll be new information that you didn't get before. It's kind of like, the instruction was, let's do another course, Keto Made Simple being the foundation, but let's bring in, the frequently asked questions that people have had through the time we've given the course. So it's really going to be a combination of the Keto Made Simple, the Cholesterol Made Simple, the Stahl's Layer, kind of the highlights of these other courses piled into one. I hope it's not going to be too much, but that becomes oxymoronic. Keto Made Simple, but you have to go through 10 hours of material, right? What, anyway, that not our brand. We want to make it as simple as possible. Anyway, thanks for joining me tonight. And as time goes on, the material that I go over in the clinic, there's a certain, as you know, there's an internet keto out there that I can help people look through and see what the most important things are. And that's pretty effective. I mean, if you do it, it's going to work unless you're on some medicine or, there's some habit eating or some other mitigating factor, thyroid problem. But there's a question that I can't fix because it has to go through medical training. It has to go through you and your other doctors, and meaning I can't kind of just tell you, don't worry about it. No one's going to worry about it. And that's cholesterol. So I spent, undue amount of hours this week so far. It's only Wednesday, wiping my brow here. Talking about cholesterol, actually, and the what is just so classic. One of the recent people who came in, I'll say, what's on your mind? How can I help? And the way it was written is my doctor is worried about my LDL cholesterol. So he wasn't, his doctor was, which was, when you just read it face value, it was perfect because actually he wasn't. He had watched our material online. He had never done the KMS class, but the interesting thing is he sees right to the issue. It's, he's not worried about it, but his doctor is. So how can I help you? And I want to do that tonight. Understand why we're in this situation of many doctors won't understand what we're talking about. And I want you to understand what cholesterol is and what it isn't, and trying to kind of breaking down the different roadblocks, if you will. I think the most important thing to understand is that high cholesterol is not a disease. And, it's funny because you can code for high cholesterol as a doctor and get paid for it, but it's not a disease. I mean, you can code for a number of things that aren't diseases. You can code for an abnormal blood test. So just because you can code for something doesn't mean it's a disease. And a lot of doctors have that misunderstanding that, well, someone must have called this a disease. There's a National Lipid Association, but that doesn't mean it's a disease to have a high cholesterol or high lipids, So the disease we're trying to prevent with lifestyle or with drug treatment of any kind, including cholesterol treatment, the disease we're trying to prevent is atherosclerosis. So the disease that happens on the arteries. It's interesting, atherosclerosis doesn't happen in the veins. So that makes a lot of people postulate, the people are thinking out of the box that it's something else other than the LDL cholesterol. The pressure must have something to do with it. Well, our arteries develop atherosclerosis, but veins don't, unless you put the vein in a place where there's higher pressure. So if you have a heart bypass surgery, say your arteries of your heart are blocked, it's pretty common now to have a surgery where you take the vein from the other part of the body, commonly the leg, and you use the vein to bypass the blockage in the artery. And what happens is a process called arteriolization, so that the vein actually turns more into an artery when you put it in that position. And you can get blockage of the veins. Wait, the arteriolized veins, when they're used as a arterial replacement. So I think that's fascinating, because the vessel itself, you know, it's not perfectly the same, but they don't handle pressure in the same way. And what I'm trying to get to is that there are a lot of other things other than just cholesterol. And you know, by the end of this talk, I hope you'll just go to bed or wake up in the morning thinking cholesterol is not a disease. That's the main point of tonight's talk, and that's really important to just ruminate on, and, you know, if months, maybe years, and then you'll be so confident to go in when the doctor or even the trained professional who's not a doctor now, it might even be, well, in my arena in the medical world, it might be a medical resident even who says, you know, you have a high cholesterol, we need to treat you with this medicine. So high cholesterol is not a disease. It's the arterial disease called atherosclerosis that we're trying to prevent. When atherosclerosis gets advanced to the point where there's clinically significant narrowing, meaning the blockage of the blood flow and the oxygen in that blood is serious enough to stop the flow of oxygen to the heart or to the brain, you might get a heart attack or a stroke, you know, a brain attack. You might get other problems in other parts of the body. But those are the major organs that we're trying to protect when we're reducing your risk by doing whatever. I mean, you're reducing your risk by addressing the metabolic syndrome. Even if you didn't have it, it does that by changing the carbohydrate in your diet. That's an effective treatment for all of these issues. So that's the other kind of interesting thing, is that doctors really think all they have is medications. And I'm trying to build on this sort of medical care today is medication care. You know, they don't really factor in lifestyle. Either they don't appreciate it, they weren't taught about it, or they never had a patient who actually, you know, lost 100 pounds or reversed their diabetes. So they just haven't seen it. So high cholesterol is not a disease. And, you know, probably years ago, I guess I was sort of set up for this, because as a young doctor, I took classes in biostatistics. So I'm actually a master's level biostatistician, which means, you know, I can work my way around basic statistics to write code to actually do those statistics. And also I can kind of troubleshoot or find flaws in research, because I spent so many years doing my own research and trying to figure out how to do it in ways that are meaningful and get real results. That's why I gravitated toward experimental studies like randomized controlled trials and not the epidemiology kind of studies. When it comes to risk, there's a way to look at associations. An association is not causation. If you've watched enough of my videos, you'll be, yeah, association is not causation, especially really tiny associations is not causation. But you can learn from different non-experimental studies. And so many years ago, I was shown figures of, you know, graphs of people who are admitted to the hospital with heart attacks. And you would think if LDL is an important factor, there would be this really strong linear relationship or some kind of relationship. The higher the LDL, the more likely you were to have a heart attack. Well, but that wasn't true, even for total cholesterol. So you can be admitted for a heart attack with a low or normal cholesterol. and however you look at it, total or LDL. And so I kind of smelled a rat in terms of strength of association many years ago, because we were always taught first plot the data. A lot of kind of newcomers to the statistics world, or if you're trying to hide something, they never show you the plotting of the data. They go directly to these kinds of complicated multivariable analyses with statistic with betas and p-values, and they never really show you the data itself to see if maybe they're creating a mountain out of a molehill sort of thing. That's very commonly done. And so the problem with observational studies is there's confounding, meaning other people could be doing other things. And it's pretty classic that people who eat a lot of meat in these studies also endorse other risky behaviors like smoking. I mean, risky meaning unhealthy behaviors like smoking or probably driving a fast car. So most of the time they don't ask about those things. So time passes, and then it's pretty clear the medical world starts to distinguish between do you die of a heart attack, so the cardiac mortality or cardiovascular mortality, or do you die at all? I mean, so some studies were showing that you can protect to have fewer heart attacks, but the overall mortality wasn't changed or might even have been higher. So there, at first, they just kind of looked at heart disease and strokes, and then the fashion was to add in total mortality. And the best thing would be if there's a strong relationship, you could, and you treated something, you would reduce the total mortality and the cardiovascular or disease specific mortality. Some studies looked at that, some didn't. But the idea then that cholesterol, remember, it's not a disease, but cholesterol itself became an endpoint for drug studies, so that they didn't even have to show that they lowered total or disease-specific mortality, heart disease. If you just showed you could lower LDL cholesterol, you would get a drug approval. So, or the doctor would be convinced, oh, it lowers LDL, so it must be good. So it's kind of like a dumbing down of the or lowering of the goalposts, so that you don't even know that that drug or that treatment is going to be reducing the outcomes. See, it's much harder to do a longer-term outcome study of death and disease. And so if you make it a shorter surrogate outcome, we put trust in that. And I don't put trust in that. I want that longer-term kind of evaluation of anything. So what do you do? Well, we teach about the relative risk and the absolute risk, and have this whole course going on now where I'm trying to give you the detail of why I came to my conclusions, and it's looking at these different studies. And I wanted to pull out some research that not necessarily in the class itself, but that was influential for me. First was that lack of correlation of total cholesterol or LDL cholesterol with disease. And so if you don't know Zoe Harcum or Zoe that name yet, I wish you would all join her email list. I'm a member of it. So I get emails from her every Monday, where she sends out an evidence-based review. Great, how can I say, very concise thinker who just goes right to the fallacies. And sometimes if I have to do a quick response to an article, I'll go see what Zoe said about it, because she's always very prompt in getting her information out. So I wonder, have any of you been following Zoe Harcum? Just give me a reaction of the hand down there. Okay, well, good. So I'm going to just show you if I can successfully. Okay, Marianne says yes. I'm going to share my screen and go to share. That's my next article. So if you go to Zoe's website, it looks like this. Can you see that? Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so I pulled up talking about cholesterol. What if you plotted everybody who had, a disease outcome and cholesterol? And it's been argued that that relationship actually started in people who had heart disease and should be saved only for those people who have heart disease. But, that the word got out and everyone should be monitoring their cholesterol, all that. So here's an article that now, you know, 2010 is kind of old, but it's still very valid. Here's the plot of cholesterol levels and death from World Health Organization, and it's 192 countries. And, you know, if anything, you would, if there was a problem with higher cholesterol causing death, you would see the line going the other way, that the higher the cholesterol level, the higher the death. And that's not what you see. So, you know, I'd been exposed to this information decades ago, and yet the organizations talk about reduction of cholesterol and all that. So let's just, not that's just total cholesterol. What about LDL? Well, in Zoe's article, she pulled out the figures from that paper with cardiovascular deaths. So not just total deaths, but, and it's the opposite relationship. If you're claiming that higher cholesterol causes more cholesterol, more heart disease, you would think that the line would go up. Higher cholesterol, higher deaths, when actually it goes down. And the line is the summary of all those different plots. If you have a plot like this, it looks like a shotgun. Basically, in statistics, you kind of say, well, there's not a whole lot going on here. If you have to draw a line to show something, you can't just see all of the information like this. So like this next one, CVD and the mean cholesterol, that looks more like a real relationship of kind of, but it's still kind of gunshot, shotgun kind of information. So each data point is kind of like the buckshot from, and if it looks like a shotgun, that means there's not a whole lot going on in terms of association, and it was not statistically significant. So, you know, you can go through cholesterol, LDLs, and all these other risk factors. Remember, they're not, it's not a disease. High cholesterol is not a disease. High LDL is not a disease. It's a risk factor. And even in more recent studies, a bit larger studies that go outside of just people with heart disease, the relationship of cholesterol being bad just isn't there. Interesting. So high cholesterol is not a disease, even though everyone's treating it like it is. Not everyone, but most people. And so I also wanted to pull out a very important study that in the scheme of research time, it's only 2021, so it's relatively recent. You know, in terms of, you know, news time, it's ancient. But this study, it was important because for you research-minded people, it was a prospective study. There's no randomization involved, so it's not a randomized trial. But they found people before they had any clinical event, any clinical history of heart disease or stroke. That's called the first incident case of something. And the reason why a study like that is powerful is that you're not diluting out or confounding with medications to treat things. You know, so once you get into the clinical arena, you know, a doctor gets to measure your tests and all, they start introducing drugs and things like that. So this is relatively free of those kinds of interventions. And yes, it is women. Women, and it probably applies to men, but I have to just say it's women. But they followed people for an average or median, you know, average of about 21 years. And so it's a powerful study in terms of following people and the incident first case. So they followed people through the year 2020 and looked at 50 different clinical and blood markers and looked for associations. Remember, this is association, not causation, between these factors and different outcomes. Well, in this case, the coronary heart disease outcome. So in that title, it's association, which is, again, it's not saying causation, but it, you know, it can't, of these biomarkers with age at onset for incident or first case coronary heart disease in women. And, you know, kind of like, remember those old classic comics where you could just go to the picture and you see everything? If you just go to the figure here on the left, you can see the main data here where the line of identity or the line of one basically means that there's no difference between two groups. And if it goes farther away from the line, it means the association is more powerful. And so here you can see the most important thing favoring the risk out here is diabetes. So if a doctor focuses on cholesterol and doesn't fix your diabetes, this is misguided. The most important, although that's not a prospective study to say that that would be a better thing to do, but it's kind of, you know, kind of obvious. If you're not fixing someone's diabetes and you prattle with cholesterol, you're not really getting the best targeting, the highest risk factor. And that is at a level of 10, I think actually 12. So it now you go down, what's the next most important risk factors we're looking in here? It turns out, well, metabolic syndrome. Oh, well, you know what that is. Triglyceride and HDL in the blood, abdominal circumference, a little bit of glucose or blood pressure elevation. That comes in second. And then there is the smoking. Yeah, still a bad thing. Hypertension. And you can see the different, there are four different dots for each category. So diabetes actually has four dots corresponding to the age up here, but they all hang pretty much together. And then overweight and obesity, current smoker, hypertension. And what's kind of crazy is the things that doctors focus on most, physical activity here, and also then LDL cholesterol here, are almost not even significant. So if this little bar goes across that line of one, it means it's not statistically significant. So things that doctor, you may have been hammered upon, you got to exercise more, you got to watch that cholesterol. And here, these are relatively minor things. If you go way down here, it's not even above two. So that's the other interesting thing about this scale is it the farther you go out, it goes up a lot. So this is 10 to 12 fold, and this is just less than two fold. And in a study like this, the evidence-based medicine people, and a lot of the reason is to, they look at observational studies like this and then look at subsequent randomized trials to see, well, what level is this kind of clinically relevant that later on it rings true. And the kind of the rule of thumb is if it's under two, then it's really not clinically relevant. It's not really, the association is unlikely to be causation. And that pretty much includes all of the cholesterol levels here by themselves. If you wrap up the triglyceride HDL and add in the other metabolic syndrome things, that's almost as important as the type 2 diabetes. On the right side here, these are all of the things you can get on an NMR lipoprofile. And as you see, this is probably one of the reasons I don't really check these anymore. That anything on here has a risk association under two or two and a half. You don't have the same sort of predictive value as these clinical things. So I know a lot of people, if the LDL is high, they search, well, I want to know what type of LDL it is. Is it small? Is it large? You know, here's the small, the risk. Again, it's the risk is almost about as low as, oh, LDL, yeah. So, but if you separated out the large and the small, there is that difference where the large really has no extra risk, but the small does have just a little bit of risk, but nowhere near as these clinical phenomena. So if you are doing those blood tests to look for inflammation or NMR lipoprofile, the number that kind of screams out, you know, look at me, and this is the last number that comes on an NMR lipoprofile is the LPIR score. So this LPIR score is putting together all of these blood factors in a predictive value for predicting insulin resistance. So LPIR being high would go along with the higher triglyceride, lower HDL, that sort of thing. And so now when I look at an NMR lipoprofile and the LDL is high, even if the particles are high or if they're small LDL, and this LPIR is low, like way under what the cut point is, I just don't really worry about it anymore. And again, it's the idea that the insulin resistance and those factors are much more important than the LDL the old total and LDL cholesterol way of looking at things. So I wonder, any, let me see if I can go to chat mode. Let's see, stop the share. And any questions about that? Remember, high cholesterol is not a disease. Let's see. Yeah, John, I think there's going to be a charge. But I think there's going to be a discounted rate for the KMS2 for those who've gone through KMS1. I'm sure Glenn's going to make it worth your while. So, I think that paper and that information is just not getting any attention. Because everyone's kind of closed their minds, right? They've signed off on following a guideline that has to do with LDLs. And so you really have to kind of inform yourself about this, but it's not all that hard. You know, I had a discussion recently in the clinic where it was more of the, high cholesterol is not a disease. So you ask your doctor, what's the evidence that I have disease? Or it might be that you've had no kind of inspection of the arteries. And I used the kind of crazy metaphor of inspecting a house. You wouldn't have you wouldn't get a loan from a bank unless someone inspected the house and the inspection that they actually looked at the pipes and made sure that they were working and all. So the idea that a doctor can read a blood test and predict, know if you have disease or not, is just wrong. And I think I'm coming out with language like it's madness. So I don't know if that's helpful, but it would make no sense for you to be given radiation therapy, because most people get cancer in the U.S., even though you don't have it, but, you're at risk for it. And why we accept treatment with a pill, well, there's an underestimate of the harmfulness of the pill or of the treatments. It's like the doctors will just kind of dismiss the fact that there are serious consequences to muscle damage that are actually not all that uncommon, but they're just underappreciated. And, a doctor doesn't want to give you a pill that has a bad side effect, but they should be aware of that at least and inform you about it. But so don't take a pill for a disease you don't have. And even under the idea that, well, we're going to prevent the disease that you don't have. What? Maybe can we follow to see if I develop the disease before you try to prevent it? You see this kind of logical flaw? And we all kind of drank that Kool-Aid as internal medicine, family medicine doctors, that it would be worth just to put statins in the water, right? You've heard people say that. I guess this first came to my personal attention in my family, where a cousin had a false positive treadmill test. He went in, had a heart catheterization, and he had no disease in his coronary arteries. So as he was leaving the hospital, they told him to go on a low-fat diet to prevent heart disease that he didn't have. So that's crazy. So ask your doctor, I could say, what's the evidence? Or you might not want to be that brash, but, gee, doc, do I have heart disease? And if it's like, well, kind of looks like, the house is in a good neighborhood and, we don't need to inspect it. We'll just give you a loan. Oh, no. So, treat yourself like you're a house, valuable, and that you need evidence of a disease before you get treated for it. Now, the oncologists are taught that from day one.
Hey, quick question for you. Are you someone who wants to be fit, healthy, and happy? And what if I told you you could get your dream body by simply just listening to a podcast? I'm Josh.
And I'm KG, and we're the hosts of the Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast.
Listen, we get it. Fitness isn't easy. Carbs, no carbs.
Just stop, okay? It doesn't have to be that complicated. And that's why we made this podcast. We get straight to the facts so you can become your best you.
So the way to check us out is click the link in the show notes or go search Fit, Healthy, and Happy podcast on any of the major podcast platforms. We'll see you soon.
It was always get some tissue. We need diagnosis. We need evidence of cancer before we treat it. And which makes sense, because some of the treatments, which could be surgical removal radiation or chemotherapy are pretty toxic. So before you're going to give a toxic drug, you're going to be very sure that this person has a problem. But even then, I've seen that pushing to that if you're in a family at risk for breast cancer, some people argue and some people do it. They do prophylactic mastectomies, breast removal, so that you don't get breast cancer because you're at that high enough risk. So, you know, that's an individual disease specific kind of thing. But when it comes to using a medicine that has some problems like statins or PCSK9 inhibitors, they're not benign. There are other treatments. And so that's the other kind of thing that may be what you could, your angle could be is, you know, doc, I've lost 50 pounds and, you know, my HDL is up. And you do think HDL is good, right? Well, yeah, they'll admit that. even on these calculators online, they don't ask for the LDL level. They ask for the HDL and the total level and kind of infer the LDL in there. But so, you know, most experts in the research setting believe that it's inflammation that sets the stage for the atherosclerosis to occur, you know, much like a sunburn and then, you know, a scab forms or a blister or something like that. So it's not the cholesterol itself that's the cause anymore, even though it's going to take decades for guidelines to change and treatment guidelines to change, especially if there's an inertia of advertising of the mindset, you know, cholesterol in the artery, stop the cholesterol in the food. Well, no, because your liver will just make more cholesterol if you eat less of it. You know, that I smelled that rat years ago in training as well. So anyway, you just look online and it's all about cholesterol being bad. You look at the data, cholesterol in the blood is not associated with increased mortality, total mortality, or cardiovascular disease mortality. And if you have heart disease or had a stroke, or you have evidence of the arterial disease, you could make a good argument for using a medicine to, in addition to lifestyle change. So don't get me wrong, I'm not anti-statin or anti-medical treatment of cholesterol. I just don't think it's LDL that is the cause anymore. I don't think there's good evidence for that. It's probably working through some other mechanism. Statins do lots of different things. And I guess the other sort of optimism I have is that Dave Feldman and the Cholesterol Code, if you're not following what they're doing, instead of telling a whole bunch of people just not to do it, Dave decided to do a study about it. And after trying to get the mainstream lipid people involved, the cholesterol people involved in a study, he just got rebuffed. You know, maybe they could say, well, he's just a computer guy. Well, no, he had a valid ideas and all. And so he raised his own money and got his own independent consultants and has hired the best CT angiogram center in the world. This is Budhoff in LA, and which is impervious to bias or it's not good enough kind of study. And so people who have high LDLs are being recruited to this study. 100 people with super high LDLs, meaning, you know, 250 or 300 LDL, not just total, it's, you know, really high LDLs. And they're getting the CT angiogram, which is not the calcium score. It's the actual CT test where they inject dye and you can actually see the artery lumen, you know, the inside of it. So you can know if there's narrowing there. Problem with the calcium score is that it doesn't tell you if there's narrowing. Tells you there's calcium there. So the first 100 people have been enrolled and they're working on a paper to publish the results of those first 100 people before. So the study itself is actually follow them for a year and repeat the CT angiogram so that they're going to see, you know, a year from now, we'll know if there's been a change in these people who now are documenting that they're in ketosis and documenting, you know, really high LDLs over that year to see if there's a change of the artery inside. And you might say, well, a year is not very long. Well, you know, it's a start, right? And in fact, the little girl, a three-year-old girl who started this whole LDL story was 3 years old and had coronary disease and heart disease. So in the familial hyperlipidemia, if LDL is the cause, it created that narrowing in as little as 3 years. So that was kind of the rationale for, you know, getting to, you know, it might take 10 years, but it if it's really high, it might take a lot less, because in this index case, it only took 3 years to get significant coronary narrowing. And in a study like the CT angiogram, you can see very small beginning of narrowing. It's not like you have to wait until you get half of it blocked. So anyway, that's exciting to see that study progress. And I think Dave's going to be doing some more research if he can get funding for it. I think he's going to go again to the people. That's Citizen Science Foundation. And I supported the first study. It was a GoFundMe sort of project. And I think that's how he's going to have to do this research now, keep going forward. So what's very, very cool is many of these people had already had high LDLs for years. So you can, in a research paradigm, I would say, well, it didn't really count. In my most conservative view, I'd say, well, the clock starts here. 100 people got a scan, and now we have a year to go by. Well, that's really not what happened. A lot of these people had been doing low-carb diets and had LDLs documented for years. And so that initial data, if you have 100 people and there's not much disease, or if there's not any disease at all, it's going to start to erode away the idea that high LDLs for even a short period of time are risky. And so that's why we're anxiously awaiting that first data on that first 100 people with the scans. I hope I explained that correctly. And, you know, the potential impact of this, you can't underestimate. I mean, this could be the first clinical trial, if it comes out and shows that it's super high LDLs, no evidence of disease, it's going to start to, is it the, you know, the first card of the house of cards of LDL that starts to fall? You know, what happens in the medical world sometimes is there's enough just kind of distrust that things will be gone. And the evidence, it's really only in the cardiology, internal medicine, family medicine world that values LDL over anything else. So anyway, that's the potential impact if it comes out totally negative, right? If, you know, high LDL, nobody gets any disease. If everyone gets disease, or if 50% get disease, and then you could see it and it's significant, you know, I'm going to be changing my tune. I'm not going to be quite so let's watch and wait. We'll try to predict who among them and why they might have disease progressing and alter those kinds of factors. You know, that's kind of what Dr. Yancey does, my colleague here, who is 10 years younger than me. If he finds that you have a high LDL on a low-carb diet, he'll ask you to modify some of the foods to lower the LDL. And when I ask him why, he says, well, because, you know, we know that LDL is a problem. Well, so it's not good. It's not science. It's more like convention, because everyone else cares about the LDL. He feels compelled to have to do that. Well, now he's the one who got on the American Diabetes Association panel and helped write the new guideline paper that basically allowed for the use of low-carb diets at the Diabetes Association level. So he may be more aware, more savvy of what it takes to stay in the mainstream. But that's politics driving someone's recommendation rather than science alone. And I'm afraid that's kind of true in medical care. There's a lot of staying in the pack mentality, that sort of thing. Let's see. Excuse me. John says, the Australian Parliament is conducting an inquiry into diabetes and is currently accepting submissions. Use Google to find their website. Okay. I'm sorry. That was, we have a different question, I think. Let's see. Michelle says, finally got my doctor to order the calcium score test going tomorrow. He wants me on statins, and I said no 2 years in a row. and hope I get a zero score. Yeah, good. Well, so you can find on PubMed, that's the national database, National Library of Medicine, PubMed.gov. Just type in the power of zero. It's kind of in the title of these papers. And you can get the papers from Miami where they show that if you have a calcium score of zero, your risk of subsequent event is very, very low. It's not zero, but it's very low. But so that's the power of zero. Yeah. Unfortunately, if it's not zero, it's not going to be very helpful. It's kind of a Pandora's box. But put in context with everything else that you're doing. Let's see. Sharon says, I'm a third of the way through the cholesterol course. All right. Good. And learning so much. Yeah. So high cholesterol is not a disease. In fact, I didn't put it in that course because that's just something that a short way of saying things that I've found to be helpful recently. I mean, it's implied in the course, but I worked for a doctor who was using good cholesterol, bad cholesterol terms, uses statins and recommends low cholesterol diets. I'm struggling with knowing how to handle it when I'm calling patients. Yeah. If it's your boss that's doing it, getting through a summer cold, if your boss is doing it, you want to just be careful. And it is a bit of a struggle, especially if patients are not doing well on the approach that you're told to tell people. Sometimes people will say, why don't you try this, or read that new Atkins book, or the carb confusion book, or you might. But best if you do it with permission. But sometimes you act and then, ask for forgiveness. How do you determine the LPIR score? Raina, it's on the printout, and it's kind of a black box. It's a combination of the different values there that have the highest predictive value for insulin resistance. So it comes from doing that blood test, the NMR lipoprofile. Excuse me. Let's see. Susan says, I saw a new family doc today, and I was surprised when he commented he followed a keto diet for 2 years before he had heart bypass surgery last year. Well, now, wait a minute. Does that mean this keto diet gave him heart bypass surgery? I hope not. In fact, actually the heart failure doctors want me to put them on keto diets because they have to lose weight before their transplant, the heart transplant team. So I hope it was not any relation there. He was very supportive and interested in what you're doing at Duke and Ayla. Great. That's, it's a slow process that every doctor has to do it themselves in order to believe it, right? Normally, the reason we do studies and publish papers and it is so that we don't have to do it all ourselves, right? I don't have to be on an antibiotic for sinusitis to know that this antibiotic I prescribed is good for sinusitis. But this weird thing that doctors have to learn often by themselves. Let's see, topic. Hub Facebook groups says, Dr. Wu, talking about ketogenic. I guess that's not going to happen today. Oh, well, sure. I can talk about that too. And let me switch to that. So the ketogenic book, well, let's see, let me just sort of wrap up. Oh, Susan said he was told to stop keto after surgery. Yeah, right. Well, I wonder what he did. Those doctors, do they make the worst patients or do the nurses? That's always what I bring up as a joke if you're my patient and it seems like you have a sense of humor. Well, I'm really happy to be part of the new book called Ketogenic, The Science of Therapeutic Carbohydrate Restriction in Human Health. And let me show you, I don't know if I have to show you I left it at the office. Well, it's 500 pages, and it's designed for we're nurses of the worst patients. I don't know, Marianne, but I'm not sure about that. So ketogenic, the science of therapeutic carbohydrate restriction, is designed for doctors and health professionals, 500 pages. I contributed to several chapters on the use of low-carb diets for diabetes and weight loss. And in the beginning introduction, Dr. Timothy Noakes, or they call him Prof. Noakes, Professor Tim Noakes, writes the introduction just like what happened in the real world. He said, I didn't know anything about low carb diets. I had to lose 20 pounds before going to a meeting he lives in South Africa. He was going to a meeting in Scandinavia. What came across his email was this book by Westman Finney Volek called The New Atkins. And he started reading it and thought, why would these doctors be associated with a quack like Atkins? And then he saw that there were over 150 articles on the book cover, you know, supporting it, and that you would lose the 20 pounds that he wanted to lose. So he thought, well, he would give it a shot. So like most doctors, he had to do it himself, and he lost the 20 pounds and found it pretty effortless. And so it lit the fire under Professor Tim Noakes. And I have to say, it's almost heroic what he would put together, this textbook with 500 pages. And it really could be a textbook for a nutrition class. Could be an ALA textbook. No. But the book is pioneering in that it brings together a chapter on how this all kind of happened, what mess we got into, kind of a short version of the investigative journalists Gary Taubes and Nina Teicholz books, so that it explains how the guidelines got all messed up. It's actually, you know, it's a narrative review. It talks about evolutionary biology and talks about how to implement low-carb diets. Those are my chapters and Dr. Yancey's chapters. It talks about all of the kind of theoretical science about cancer, about all the neurologic diseases, that the migraines, autism, and all of the evidence for all of these different disease states are not at the same level, but there is enough to cite papers showing, you know, associations between these diseases, or even case series or case studies of people getting better. We had a visiting student this summer who's writing a case study on total resolution of cystic acne in a young man after 8 weeks of just cutting out carbs. Turns out there's a strong relationship between sugar and acne, and the more fat your body is making, the more sebaceous fat oil happens in the skin. Pretty logical. So that's a simple mechanism. But so the therapeutic carbohydrate restriction term came from the Society of Metabolic Health Professionals, and having the group in Cape Town, it was the Nutrition Network and then the Noakes Foundation being the shepherds of the editorial process, which, you know, it takes a lot of work. Again, it's heroic, kind of painstaking editorial stuff. I've edited a textbook that's much smaller before, and of course, editing other people's writing is almost sometimes worse than writing it yourself, because you have to shape things so much if you're that, you know, if you care that much. So, and the Jen says the SMHP has a course using ketogenic. The book itself, yeah. So it's $150, in fact, I decided to buy a bunch. And I'm sending one to my department chair. I'm sending one to my dean at Duke. They are actually internal medicine doctors that I've known peripherally. They come through my department into those positions. And, you know, I don't know if they'll have them on their bookshelf, but at least they'll be aware of the you know, mass of information now that's available. A doctor recently emailed me, I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and how can I find research on low-carb diets? And I thought, this book! There are thousands of references in this book, and then categorized in various ways. Yeah, so that was my cheerleading for the Ketogenic, The Science of Therapeutic Carbohydrate Restriction book. But it's really designed for health professionals or even a course on nutrition. It could be, you know, so if you read some of the early reviews on Amazon, so it's getting some critical comments, which are deserved. I mean, that the science of the evolution and putting that in there is not as clear or as sound, as solid as randomized controlled trials. So, but if you're kind of trying to put together information from all sources, I think it's reasonable to bring in evolution, to bring in the history of how the guidelines were pretty much influenced by industry and not science. I think that's valid to be able to explain what's been going on. And anyway, so yeah, that, okay. I fulfilled the Facebook announcement. And I wonder, is there anything else that I can help you with tonight? And does anyone want to raise their hand and unmute, uncloak, say hi? Sandy, let's see, I had to ask you to unmute. And oh, maybe I have a restriction on muting that I didn't know about.
No, it was me.
Okay. How are you doing?
Great. This is very interesting. Very interesting.
Well, the first time you've heard it, you won't believe it. You'll think I'm crazy. It took me literally 20 years of kind of living, breathing, hearing David Diamond, who was at the University of South Florida, give the same talk over and over, and then in further and further detail, I'm like, man, it's not all this cholesterol thing.
Yes.
What do you do for a living?
I'm retired.
Well, when you worked, were you in the medical field?
Yes, nursing.
Yeah, and what was the training that you got on cholesterol and?
That it's bad and, medication and so many people are on these statin drugs. And I'm learning that through good nutrition, we are just eliminating so many of our health problems. And it's so easy to do. It's not complicated to eat the way we've been eating with AWA. I was commenting to someone last night how it's interesting that we've been misled about all the fruits and vegetables, and so many of those things are high in carbohydrates. Not only that, they are genetically modified. They're treated with insecticides, so we're ingesting a lot of chemicals, and now they sell vitamins where you get all your fruits and vegetables.
I know. If you watch TV, every other commercial is for that.
That's right. Yeah.
Listen, vice. Well, anyway.
you think back to 50 years ago when people were just eating a lot of meat and very basic foods, they didn't have a lot of these health issues. So it all makes sense. We're just kind of coming full circle.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you all to the whole group for all the work and putting all of this together for all of us. I wish everyone would be interested and want to get on board with this. I'm always trying to share with family and friends, and it's the answer to so many things. We appreciate you.
Well,
my husband's lost about 50 pounds. His hand size is down to like a 34, 36 now. And he's just, even his eyesight improved. Here's a tremendous testimony. He went to the eye doctor last week and his eyesight has improved by 50%.
That's amazing.
From losing weight and inflammation. So there's one more positive thing.
Yeah, that's great. I wonder if there was also blood sugar improvement.
There probably was, but that's not something that he checks. Yeah.
Often the blood sugar changes can change the eyesight.
Yeah, that was something that I had been reading about on my own prior to joining AWA. So it's really very exciting when you get into this and you start realizing all the wonderful benefits. I'm just so thankful.
Well, you're welcome.
I have a son-in-law who's a pediatrician, and he's a firm believer in Weight Watchers. And instead of losing weight, his weight just keeps going up. And, he's in healthcare. So it's hard to sway him. If you have something that I could recommend, a book or something that I could gift to him with.
Well, and your carb infusion, of course.
Of course. And I have that, of course.
But, it's with health care people, I try to just ask politely, well, how's it going? How's it working for you? But it's the darndest thing. So the pediatric group at Duke has an endowed pediatric obesity program, and it doesn't work. And right. You know, they did a keto version, you know, a decade ago when it first started. I said, hey, I'll help you. And then everyone did great. And then they said, well, we stopped the program. I said, why? Well, there was no published data after 3 months, even though the kids wanted to stay and learn it. And now they, no, why didn't you call? Anyway, it almost makes me think that they don't want it to work. And it plays into the drugs, drug treatment of everything, you know, lifestyles, art, oh, you know, my fruit, play those violins, you know, sorry, you can't have your fruit. But if you can politely say, well, you know, just try it for a week, you know, cravings are going and all that, and then, no, I don't know, just try it for a day. This is my negotiation in the clinic, you know. Often that's what it takes. It's just one day, and then they don't have cravings. But I
can honestly testify that is absolutely the truth. Within 2 to 3 days, all of your cravings just disappear. And I was someone that had heartburn, reflux, and I did take some of those medications.
That's right. We have a pill for those.
Yeah. Exactly. There's a pill for everything, but why take a pill for the rest of your life when you can just change the way you eat and rectify all those problems?
Well, you know, because you guys stayed on, I have to confess, I have no air conditioning at the moment. 93.
I'm so sorry.
And this is sweat.
I'm sorry.
This is North Carolina.
Well, I'm in North Carolina, too, and we had that terrible storm the other night, lost our power, so we had no air conditioning for about 6-8 hours.
Yeah, well, so my pleasure. Look, a couple questions or comments. Any plans to translate Andrew Carr Confusion into Spanish? Well, we've asked our publishers and have not heard back, so it's not a great response. So Anthony thought I was sweating because of my cold or my flu. No, this is North Carolina humidity. I mean, it doesn't even have to, you get out of the shower, if you don't have air conditioning, I'm sweating already again. And then, I don't know, John, what is 21 centigrade in Fahrenheit? Is 21 C in Adelaide? I know I could look it up, but I'm always lazy. And then, of course, you all know the direct transfer conversion, but 21's kind of hot, right? Waiting there, but good. Well, any other, excuse me. Oh, 21 centigrade is cool. See, I keep saying it. Yeah. And then anyway, this book, and a question about is cholesterol in the book, you know, that Terry, I have to look because we didn't go into great detail in our chapters about cholesterol, but yes, the lipid current model of how lipids are used are in the book, and I don't know if it pushes that envelope into, you know, you got to question the treatment of high cholesterol. I'll look at that and get back to you on that, because that's a great question, great point. So Anthony says 21 centigrade is about 70. Oh, yeah, I wish it was 70. Actually, the early mornings here, excuse me, are beautiful. The morning is, you know, but then the heat happens. Any other thoughts, comments? Otherwise, I'll take care of myself here. You know, doctor, heal thyself, and take care, everyone. And it's great to see you live or on the replay. And yeah, thanks for the comments. Appreciate it. And till next time, see you. If you enjoyed this video, be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell, and check out AdapterLifeAcademy.com.